This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. It's Bill Bartholomew here with you, as I am for new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. And of course, we've got the back catalog of more than 300 episodes at ripodcast.com, Spotify, or wherever you like to get shows. Okay, today we welcome Dr. Magnus Thorson of Johnson & Wales University, where they're offering a cannabis entrepreneurship program at the university. So we get into what exactly his program entails, what the students are going to learn, and where the origins of this came from, which is very interesting, but then also a broad discussion on, I propose the question, is Rhode Island ready for the inevitable for cannabis legalization? From a business standpoint, from a social justice standpoint, there's so much to this. It's so much more than just flipping the switch. We talk about the workforce development that is going to take place as a result of cannabis legalization here in the area, and frankly, the money that we're missing out on right now. And we've got Massachusetts moving towards a point where they're going to be offering home delivery fairly soon, while Rhode Island hasn't even gotten to a point of general recreational legalization yet. So Governor McKee recently said that he is looking for, quote unquote, the best possible bill on this, that he is looking for more of an entrepreneurial angle. This may get bumped to the fall, folks. This may be something that the General Assembly resumes in the fall, and it goes through then. But it does seem inevitable. There's enormous support in both chambers and likely inside the governor's office as well. So a pleasure to have Dr. Thorson here on the program to break all this down with us and talk about the program the JWU is offering right here in Providence. By the way, folks, if you want to help support this independent outlet, Bartholomew Town, offering opinion, analysis, journalism and entertainment, well, there's a few ways you may do so. Of course, just share this or any other episode on social media or talk about the show. That's how we've built this whole thing up. There's been no ad spends or no billboard signs or any of that nonsense. If you want to go a step further, join our Patreon account, patreon.com/Bartholomew Town, or just click the support link wherever you're listening right now. You'll get exclusive content and you'll be supporting the bedrock of this operation. patreon.com/Bartholomew Town. Okay, let's get to it. Talking cannabis business and the education thereof with Dr. Magnus Thorson of Johnson & Wales University. Okay, so today we're talking about something that is, look, I mean, the reality is that when you talk about cannabis, there are so many elements to it. There's obviously the social justice and equity conversation. There's the just getting out of the way of human rights, frankly, element of it. But there's a big business side to it as well. And there's an industry that is well underway, that has been underground, quote unquote, for decades and is now surfaced to the point where we're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry. And so I guess let's kind of get right into what you're doing, what your role is, and sort of the educational piece of that, and where you see this industry going here in Rhode Island.
Well, so The conversation really started at Johnson & Wales about cannabis entrepreneurship, or my idea for cannabis infusion into the curriculum, no pun intended. But, you know, I brought it up because my students were starting to ask, you know, can we do our project on a cannabis restaurant, a cannabis-infused bakery, a butt and breakfast? And, you know, I saw the interest emerge from the students, and I said, okay, let's see what opportunities there are for education. And sort of my first glance at the marketplace to see where one would go for education, the only thing I came up with, now keep in mind, this is 2017-18, there was a university sort of a certificate program available in Amsterdam. And outside of that, there was nothing. Nothing. There was some conversation about the, you know, the big ag schools were talking about hemp, because the conversation in the House and Senate about legalizing, non-psychoactive hemp as an agricultural product had emerged. And hemp, the conversation was mostly about hemp as a solution to climate change. or as a solution for economic development in areas that had, you know, gone through a transition. So all that to say, there was really nothing in the educational category that dealt with cannabis or hemp. And I thought that, you know, seeing that there was an interest from my students, seeing that we were heading towards legalization, I figured there'd be an opportunity here.
Certainly is. And I mean, of course, you're referencing the Farm Bill, which ultimately legalized hemp. And now we see the proliferation of CBD products. I mean, at any gas station you go to, you're going to see honey sticks and this and that and the other. And from an entrepreneurial standpoint, especially whether you're talking about the culinary arts or just broadly speaking, there's a tremendous opportunity for people to get involved in. We're waiting to see now. Governor McKee recently said last week, we're taping here in early June, so last week, late May or something, early June, he said that he's looking to sign a bill that does encourage more of an entrepreneurial element than like a state-run. Good example might be the New Hampshire liquor stores type of model. What's your sense about how your students are going to be able to get into this industry, let's say in the next 5 years? Is there an opportunity for somebody to enter in and know that there's going to be a legal state or even federal marketplace for them to engage some of these ideas you just referenced and beyond?
Well, we're already seeing it. We're already seeing students, current students that are studying management or hospitality, that are already working in the cannabis industry. So that's not hard to see.
Yeah.
Conference that I attended to doing my research before we launched the program, I ran into former students. I ran into current students who were working in the industry. So, from a jobs perspective, you know, when the program launched in November, the job outlook was pretty bleak worldwide. But just one store in Attleboro, Massachusetts, the closest one to the campus, had just hired 200 people when everyone was laying people off. And actually, they said, they reported serendipitously that when restaurants closed and laid their bar staff off, they hired them because they say, here are people that are already trained to use the POS system, the point of sale system. Here are people who have the ability to provide customer service, interact with the public. Thank you very much, hospitality industry. You've already trained them for us. We're happy to take them. So, yeah, that was a very, very easy transition. And what our partners, our industry partners, are reporting is that they need people at all level. It's not just butt tenders. It's people who are willing to take a managerial role, production role. So there's human resource. There was a huge demand for human resource professionals to go through applications and process people as they were being hired. So, yeah, it's not very hard for me to envision how my students are going to take advantage of this. So that's one side of the story is the employment. The other side of the story is opportunities when it comes to opening up their own business. Yeah. And we see people, as you say, gas stations, any retail outlet is going to offer the CBD product. But you also see people who are, learning intricate parts of the extraction that happens, and they're infusing it into their favorite pastries. They're infusing it into confectionery. One of our industry partners asked me, would it be appropriate for us to ask if you could talk to your colleagues at the Culinary College and get us somebody who has a background in confectionery? And I said, absolutely. We're interested in them getting well-paying jobs. So, yeah, of course. So all that to say, there is opportunities both for them as employers, as employees, and as operators.
And you mentioned hospitality. You know, it's not something that I've heard the Rhode Island Hospitality Association, Dale Venturini and so forth here in Rhode Island, discuss very much. You know, they're focused right now on restaurants, obviously hotels, conventions, so on and so forth. This seems like, you know, the elephant in the room to me. It's like we have the opportunity within months. We should. I mean, this may be pushed to the fall in the Rhode Island General Assembly, it does seem, in terms of cannabis legalization and what Dan McKee, the governor, may sign. But sometime in the next year, this is going to be legal in Rhode Island. Is Rhode Island ready for this industry?
I think Rhode Island has been ready for this industry. We've had a dispensary in Providence for a decade or more. We have dispensaries. They're circling the wagon, if, so to speak. Yep. We have them in Attleboro and we have them in other towns in Massachusetts. It's an important thing for us to be proactive as a small state. You know, when we're surrounded by business opportunity, but we're not letting it in, that's not going to be good for us. So, yes, we're ready. The question is, how fast are we willing to take it? In other words, are we willing to do on-site consumption license? Are we willing to talk about that now?
Yeah.
Because, we're going to be catching up. Are we willing to talk about home delivery?
Yep.
Because by the time that we start talking about just legalizing, Massachusetts is going to be doing home delivery. And, if the governor, if we are concerned with being a pro-business, entrepreneurially minded state, we need to, get our act together and be ready for a full, open with cannabis.
Yeah, no question. I mean, there's obviously no shortage of customers. I mean, just anecdotally, you can say that. You can go to Nova Farms or Northeast Alternatives or Solar Therapeutics in Massachusetts and see the amount of Rhode Island plates there at any given point in time. And when you look at the dispensary program, there are thousands of people who have a legitimate medical condition that allows that cannabis in any form assists them manage pain, quality of life, so on and so forth. Let's be honest, though, there are tons of people who have medical cards here in Rhode Island, or they kind of use the back door and they get the California card, that really don't have a medical condition. They're just looking to partake in it from a recreational or however you want to put it standpoint. They're clogging up the lines at essentially pharmacies and where they should be diverted into that other sector of recreation. So we've got to get to a point now where the infrastructure can meet the demand. And it's got to be turnkey, as you say, because otherwise we're going to be in a position where we're just catching up with Massachusetts and you'll still see a loss of revenue to our neighbors.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point, clogging up the medical system. I mean, think about it. We're just stepping out of a pandemic where I think 99% of the populace qualifies as having anxieties, which right. is one of the things that cannabis is often prescribed for. Yeah, you're right. We should work towards turnkey operations. I mean, I've seen, I've read through the legislation. The legislation is well written. The legislation is based on the best practices and the learning that we've seen from other states that have legalized it. If you look at the literature of, what are the adverse effects of legalization? I read through quite a bit of the literature coming out of Colorado, which was one of the first to permit recreational. And the only thing that struck me was the people of Colorado were now just telling the truth.
Yeah.
You know, when they went to the emergency room, they said, well, I had some, bad food or something when they had ingested marijuana. Now people just tell the truth when they go. But, if you look at the metadata, if you look at, has the rate of car accidents increased? Has the rate of hospitalization increased? Has the rate of death increased? There's been no change in the death statistic, number one, and the hospitalization statistics has not changed. And most people who use cannabis recreationally are not getting into car accidents. So they're you know, all the things that when people put out there as detractors from full recreational legalization, they've been proven wrong, or they've been disarmed, if you will. So there's nothing stopping us, really.
I want to go inside the classroom, go inside the program, and take a look at what a student who engages in this program would experience. We'll do that right after we take a quick break, right here on the Bartholomew Town Podcast, Rhode Island's podcast of record. Folks, give me a follow on Twitter and Instagram at Bill Bartholomew, and join the Bartholomew Town Podcast Facebook group for daily Rhode Island discussions, digital content, and much more. Johnson and Wales, you've got a student, they enroll in your class, they have an interest maybe at a very deep level where they envision themselves as getting involved in a long-term goal of the cannabis-related business, or perhaps they just want to get a flavor for what the industry looks like for something else they're going to do. They may have to interact with the industry, or just general curiosity, whatever. Take us inside your classroom, your program, and what it would be like for a student who is coming in with no experience whatsoever in this industry.
So first, let's if we talk about the program from a 30,000 foot view, we have a business core that focuses on general business practices and operations, marketing, accounting, economics, and such. Then we have the cannabis specific courses, and the two courses that are taught in the College of Business are cannabis entrepreneurship and small business cannabis operations. So they're two different courses. So the entrepreneurship course, we talk about cannabis from the start. This is a student who has no exposure to cannabis on a scientific level. We start, so it's a 16-week course, a normal semester course. The first 4 to 6 weeks are dedicated to the history of the phenology of the plant, the human interaction with cannabis. How is cannabis affected culture, politics? We talk about the ban on cannabis. What was the impetus for banning cannabis? And we are going to talk about social justice. We're going to focus on the racial inequities and how cannabis has been used as a tool to suppress people of color, Latinx and African Americans in the United States. We are going to talk about social justice, what has been done wrong, and what are some of the tools that are available to us to improve life with cannabis. I mean, I was going through some documents looking in preparation for our conversation, and what has happened now that we have legalized cannabis and taxed it is we're using the tax revenue for good things. So for education, for workforce development, for economic development. And if you think about it, all that money is just going now for nefarious things. But when it gets legal, you can start to collect the taxes and use them. I mean, the state of California just collected $1 billion additionally in tax. Massachusetts, $118 million in 2020. So we're watching that money in Rhode Island go in the underground or transferred to illegal operations. Anyway, going back to the classroom. So we're going to talk about all that open-eyed, and then we get into how to identify a sellable product, a value-added product, and how to develop and build up a business around that. So basically, if you have an idea that you want to do in, you know, cannabis or THC infused coffee drinks, and you want to make that your value-added product, then let's talk about how do we build a business plan that's gonna actually make sense, you know, not based on, you know, dreams and wishes, but actual dollars and cents and numbers. So that's the entrepreneurship course. The small business operations, cannabis small business operations, is for those who are already come with competencies in culinary arts or baking, pastry, whatever their competency is, and they would like to take advantage of this business opportunity and infuse it into what they're already doing. So, but both courses are going to address issues of social justice. They are going to talk about the racial inequities that have been, you know, largely driven, you know, by this prohibition on cannabis.
Yeah, one of my best friends is Jamaican, and one thing that he would always say, I've heard him say this literally like 10 times in the course of 15 years, the poster that one out of every 10 college kids has on their wall of Bob Marley with a huge spliff has done more damage to his culture and his people than almost anything else. Just the mentality out there that, oh yeah, you know, cannabis, it's associated with an illegal activity, and then that therefore is associated with people of color. And, you know, his thing is let's get those posters down as part of this broad, you know, cleanup. And he's right. And now the narrative is shifting to no, cannabis is associated with smart entrepreneurial thinking, not even in terms of medicinal or recreational conversations, but who's involved in it. And then so in turn, there has to be a significant equity piece in terms of restorative justice in communities that are most impacted by this. Is that something that is taught at Johnson & Wales?
Well, it's certainly something that's a front of my mind, and we will talk about it. You know, I was an elected official in Vermont, and as such, I enacted option tax regulation that basically brought revenue to our municipality that we used for marketing and beautification. Well, the bill as it's written in Rhode Island includes a 3% option tax for those municipalities that don't opt out. That 3%, you know, could be used or should be used, in my opinion, to workforce development, economic development, education for the communities that have been adversely impacted by the war on drugs. The war on drugs has wreaked havoc in our communities of color. And here is an opportunity for us as a people to do right for the individuals in our community that have been adversely affected. Now, we can't undo 40, 50 years of unjust policing, but we can take the revenue that comes in from cannabis sales and funnel it into education. We can help people who are coming out of the prison system. We can help them adjust to society. We can help them with job training. We can, you know, we can train them to be heating, ventilation, and air conditioning installers, you know, contractors. They don't have to necessarily go to college, but we can give them the job skills to better the community, to improve the lives of the people that have been negatively impacted. So yeah, that's going to be part of the conversation, because we are educating the entrepreneurs of the future. We are educating the people that are going out into the community, and we want them to be community minded.
Absolutely. all such important stuff. And at this point in time, let's hope this legislation goes through and it's the best possible version of it. I know there are a few different versions of the cannabis bills out there right now. Let's hope that our leaders find a way to get this done quickly and equitably and in a smart way for the state. You know, we brainstorm about ideas for how to generate revenue. And, you know, there are great ones like the blue economy and broad conversations. But I mean, you look at the amount of farmland and the amount of consumers here in Rhode Island and the opportunity for entrepreneurial ideas in the hospitality industry and just in general. It seems like a no-brainer to me, and I'm shocked that it's taken this long. And hopefully with programs like yours, that stigma that somehow that like alcohol is totally great. You know, everybody, let's get drinks. You know, let's go get drinks. Let's do this. It's a corporate culture thing that you get to go get drinks, and somehow cannabis is buried as some sort of, you know, you're some kind of loser if you use it. And let's hope that that broad generic narrative is corrected as all of these changes take place, and educational programs like yours are going to help quite a bit in terms of correcting that false narrative.
Well, I mean, you bring up an excellent point, and I'm happy to correct that for your listeners right now. You talk about alcohol, and we celebrate alcohol. When we win, we drink. When we lose, we drink. You know, the United States, the CDC reports that 95,000 people died as a result of alcohol use last year. 46,000 people died as a result of opioid overdose last year. If you look through the literature from the CDC, the only thing that they can say about cannabis is that it may be socially addictive. But there's zero fatalities, right? And so that's an important thing to know. Zero fatalities, right? People talk about cannabis being a gateway drug. And you know what? They're absolutely right. It's a gateway drug to get people off alcohol and get people out of opioids. If you want to get people who are having issues with lapsing on drugs, cannabis is a way for people to dull pain. It's 28% of our veterans report to using cannabis to soothe their PTSD. We have this salvation that's been laying dormant, and we've been suppressing it. The second thing I want to bring up to your point about, you know, we need to there's the blue economy, the green economy. Well, cannabis is the only industry that I know that provides its own seed money. You talk about economic development in anything else. Farming, we're looking to philanthropic operations to provide us the seed money so that we can grow heirloom tomatoes, right? When we're cleaning our beaches, we're looking for philanthropic funds or federal funding. But when we're doing cannabis, it's self-funded. And the state of Massachusetts, $118 million in tax revenue, additional tax revenue to provide seed funding for whatever programs they want. So, I mean, when you talk about it like that, you're absolutely right. It's ludicrous that we're not jumping in and embracing it.
Rhode Island's podcast of record, B-Town.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.